Okay, we still have some more things to learn about the jhana factors. Now there are five jhana factors. They are vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. Or sukha and ubekha are vedana. So there are five factors. Now the question is, why are these five only called factors of jhana or members of jhana? Now, when a jhana consciousness arises, then, say the first jhana consciousness, 35 chittisikas arise along with that consciousness. So why are those five only called jhana factors and not the others? Now there are contact, attention and so on, and they are not called jhana factors, but only these five are called jhana factors. The answer is because they alone possess the ability to contemplate or to examine the object closely. And also because they are the opposites, direct opposites of the five mental hindrances. So for these two reasons, only these five are called jhana factors. Now, vitaka, it takes the mind onto the object. It puts the mind onto the object. And then vichara keeps the mind anchored there. And piti just refreshes the mind. And sukha intensifies it. Supported by these four chetasikas, by, say, putting on the object, keeping it there, refreshing and intensifying the ekagata, the one-pointedness of mind, puts the mind on the object evenly and undistractedly. And ekagata can do this function probably only when it is supported by the other four, vitaka, vichara, piti, and sukha. And when ekagata puts the mind on the object, it puts evenly. That means it makes the mental faculties work in harmony, one not exceeding the other. And also when it put the mind on the object, it does not let it to be distracted to other objects. So it is actually the ekagata which is most important among these five factors. But it cannot do its function properly if it is not supported by the other four. So these all five possess the ability to deal with the object closely, to examine, or we should say, to contemplate the object closely, or to examine the object closely. So that is why they alone are called jhana factors and not the other chittisikas that go along with the jhana consciousness. So this is one question. The other question is that stems from the second reason given, because these five jhana factors are direct opposites of the five mental hindrances. So, which is the direct opposite of which mental hindrance. So it's given on the sheet. The first part is factors in jhanas, and the second opposite of jhana factors. So please look at that sheet. On the sheet you'll see opposites of jhana factors. Jhana factors and corresponding hindrances, they inhibit. Now, vitaka is the opposite of tina and medha, or sloth and torpor. Now, vitaka takes you to the object. And when there is vitaka, there is a kind of mental activity. So vitaka is something like the nature of shaking. So when there is vitaka, tina and medha cannot overwhelm the mind. That is why sometimes we say, I cannot go to sleep because I have a lot of vitaka. So long as there is vitaka, tina and medha are inhibited. They are the direct opposites of vitaka. And then vichara is the direct opposite of vichikicca, doubt. Now vichara is examining the object, or keeping the mind anchored onto the object, and so it is like panya. So since it is like panya, it is the opposite of vichikicca, opposite of doubt. And PD is the opposite of vyabhara. That's very obvious, right? So when there is PD, you don't have ill will. And sukha is the opposite of uddhaccha and kukkuccha, restlessness and remorse. Restlessness here means restlessness of mind. But when mind is restless, maybe the body is also restless. So restlessness and remorse are the direct opposite of sukha, or sukha is the direct opposite of these two. So when you are happy here means peaceful. So when you are peaceful, there is no restlessness and no remorse. These two are something like how to call, making mind agitated. But sukha is peaceful, and so sukha is the object of restlessness and remorse, or uddhaccha and kukkuccha. And then ekagata, let's go to ekagata, one-pointedness of mind. Ekagata is the direct opposite of kamachanda, sensual desire. Now, when we have sensual desire, our mind is taken to different objects. See, we are attached to this thing, we are attached to that thing, and so our mind is like going round. But ekagata does not let the mind to go here and there. It makes the mind stable and stay on one object, and so it is the opposite of sensual desire. I think this information is good for us, because if we want to develop ekagata, ekagata means samadhi. Samadhi and ekagata are synonymous. So if we want to develop samadhi, we should have little of sensual desires. So long as we have so much sensual desire, we cannot hope to get samadhi, concentration, or ekagata, because our minds will be always attracted to different objects. So long as mind is going to different objects, mind cannot get rest. Mind cannot be still. And so we cannot get concentration. So we should keep it in mind and try to have as less sense desire as possible if we want to develop concentration. And then upekkha. Upekkha has the nature of peacefulness. Actually, upekkha is more peaceful than sukha. So upekkha is said to be similar to sukha. So it is the direct opposite of, again, uddhaccha and kokoccha, restlessness and remorse. So, because these five, I mean, sukha and upekkha are one, because these five are the opposite of the five mental hindrances, they alone are called constituents of jhana, or members of jhana, or jhana factors. So, there are two answers, or two reasons given for they are being called jhana factors. The one is, they alone possess the ability to examine or to contemplate the object closely. And also, they alone are the direct opposites of the five mental hindrances. Now, these, so long as there are mental hindrances in our minds, we cannot hope to get concentration, let alone jhanas. So, the mental hindrances are inhibited by these jhana factors, says, respectively. Okay, now we go to the next section, that is arupa vachara citta. So we already finished rupa vachara citta. Today, arupa vachara citta. There are 12 arupa vachara cittas. And they are divided into kusala, wholesome, vipaka, resultant, and kriya, functional. And each one has four cittas, and so there are altogether 12 arupa vachara cittas, 12 formless sphere consciousness. What is the meaning of arupa vachara? Now, that which mostly moves about or roams in the four formless realms, that which is of the formless sphere. Now, you know there are 20 realms of Brahmas, 20 realms of higher celestial beings, and 16 are said to be form, are said to belong to form sphere, and four to formless sphere. So, the four formless sphere are those where there is only mind. So there is no form or no material body there. So they are formless or materialless beings or mind only beings. So when a person is reborn there, only the mind, that means only cetas and cetasikas will arise there. No material thing whatsoever. No body, no eyes, no ears and so on. In order to be reborn in those formless realms, one has to get these jhanas, one of these four arupa vachara jhanas. Now, how does one go about, say, to get arupa vachara jhanas? Now, in order to get arupa vachara jhanas, one must have already the five rupa vachara jhanas. One must be able to enter into them. One must be very familiar with these five rupa vachara jhanas. And from these rupa vachara jhanas, or basing on these rupa vachara jhanas, especially the fifth, the yogi, the meditator, will go on to arupa vachara. Now, These jhanas are called mundane jhanas. So they can be attained even when there are no Buddhas. So they can be attained by people who are not Buddhists also. Many Hindus, according to our books, many people who are not Buddhists also get these jhanas. Now, there are people who find fault with the physical body. They think that we suffer because we have this physical body. Because we have this physical body, we have lots of ailments, diseases, aches, pains, and so on. And also, depending on this physical body, we try to we quarrel with each other, we try to hurt each other, and so on. So they think that we have a lot of suffering because we have this physical body. So if we can be without this physical body, we would be very happy. So they find fault with physical body of material things, and so they try to eliminate or get rid of this physical thing, physical body. So, in order to get rid of physical body, what they have to do is they must first take the physical thing or material thing as an object of meditation. Then they will proceed. So first, a person must be able to get into Rupa Vachara Jhanas or have mastery in using the five Rupa Vachara Jhanas. Now, after he entered into fifth Rupa Vachara Jhanas, and then he emerges from that Rupa Vachara Jhana, and then what he does is to concentrate on the space left by the removal of the kasina counterpart sign. Now, when you practice kasina meditation, first you look at the disc, and then you try to memorize it, and then you get the image in your mind. The first image is called crushed sign. And then you dwell on that sign again and again, and it becomes refined. And so when it becomes refined, and it is clear of blemishes and so on, it is called a counterpart sign. So these signs are actually not ultimate reality. They are concepts, actually, because they are all only in your memory, in your mind. So, a person who dislikes matter, material thing, also dislikes something that resembles that matter. The real kasina disc is matter, a material thing. But that counterpart sign is not a material thing. It is a concept, conceptual object. But it resembles the material object. So that person hates that concept also. The simile given in Visuddhimagga and also in Attasalini is that a person who is afraid of ghosts will be afraid of something which resembles a ghost. He may see a tree stump, say, at night, and he may think that that is a ghost and he is afraid of it. Sometimes a person is afraid of a snake, and then when he sees on his waist a rope or a crack in the ground, he might think that it is a snake, and then he is afraid of that. So in the same way, this person dislikes or is disgusted of matter. He doesn't like a physical body. When he doesn't like the physical body, he also doesn't like something that resembles the physical body or physical thing, that the physical thing that is this counterpart sign in his mind, which is a concept. So he tries to remove this concept from his mind. So in order to remove it, first he must get this sign into his mind. So he concentrates on this mental image, counterpart sign again and again and again. And then he stopped paying attention to that sign. Instead, he pays attention to the space taken by or covered by that sign. So when he stopped paying attention to the sign itself, that sign disappears. And in its place, there remains just an empty space. And that empty space is called space obtained by the removal of kasina sign. When a person removes the kasina sign, he does not remove it just as he removes a mat or he removes a cake out of a pan or something like that, but simply he doesn't pay attention to that object, to that concept. So when he doesn't pay attention to it, it disappears from his mind, and in its place there remains an empty space. So that empty space becomes the object of his meditation. So he dwells upon, or he contemplates on that space, saying, this space is infinite, this space is infinite, infinite space, infinite space. Now, he can expand that space in his mind, mentally expand it as much as he likes. He may expand this space to the size of the whole world cycle. He may expand this space to about the size of a football field or about the size of the mat or something like that. So, after that, he dwells on it, saying to himself, infinite space, infinite space, infinite space. Now, that space is called infinite or limitless. Why? That space is left when the kasina sign is removed, right? So there must be some limit to it, right? But he must contemplate on it as infinite space, or limitless space. Now, here limitless means not that it has no boundaries or whatever. But since it is a concept, since it is not an ultimate reality, it has no beginning. So it has no end. So that is why it is called limitless or boundless or infinite. So infinite in the sense that it has no arising edge and no disappearing edge. Because concepts have no arising and no disappearing. They appear in our minds, and so we cannot say that they arise at this time and they disappear at another time. So, since that space obtained by the removal of the kasina sign is a conceptual object, it has no beginning and no end, and so it is said to be infinite, without beginning and an end. And he contemplates on that object again and again and again. And so when he pays attention to that object and contemplates on that object, his hindrances become suppressed or subdued, and so his mind becomes steady again, and he takes that object again and again and again until the first Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness arises in his mind. So when that first Arupa Vajra Jhana arises in his mind, he is said to gain the first Arupa Vajra Jhana. And that first Arupa Vajra Jhana takes that conceptual image, that space as an object. That is why it is called in Pali akasananja yatana. I'm afraid you will have to memorize these names. The English translations are so long, longer than the Pali names. So akasananja yatana. You know the word akasa, right? Akasa means the sky or the space. So ananja here means no end or no edge, having no edge, having no end, endless. Ayatana means, let's say, a base. We'll come to that later. So it is called akasananja yatana. So the meaning is jhana having infinite space as object. Now in the translations, in the path of purification, and also in this book, the word base is used. But I think that's not so good. Wholesome consciousness pertaining to the base of infinite space. Now, we must understand the word ayatana here. Akasananja ayatana, right? Akasananja ayatana. Ayatana, the word ayatana is translated as base. But here, base means habitat or simply the object. So, simply it means the object. So this consciousness has the infinite space as object. So instead of using base, I think we should use object. Base can mean some other thing. So, the base of infinite consciousness. So, this is a first Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness. And with this Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness, how many jhana factors arise?
Two.
Only two. Upekkha and Ekaggrata. So Arupa Vajra Jhanas have the same two jhana factors that fifth Rupa Vajra Jhana has. So they have the same jhana factors, the same number of jhana factors. Now, after getting the akasananja yatana jhana, he wants to go to the second, vinyananja yatana. So he thinks that akasananja yatana is near to the material things. And it is not so subtle, say not so lofty as the second vinyananja yatana. So by thinking in that way, he loses interest in the first the akasananja yatana. He becomes dispassionate towards that consciousness, and so he wants the higher consciousness. So in order to get the second Arupa Vajra Jhana, he must take the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as the object of his meditation. So, after entering into the first Arupa Vajrayana jhana, he emerges from that jhana and then takes that jhana consciousness as the object of his meditation, saying, consciousness, consciousness, or infinite consciousness. Now here, infinite means this consciousness takes the object which is infinite. Therefore, it is called infinite consciousness. And also, when he contemplates on that consciousness, he must take it as a whole, not just parts of them, parts of it. So there should be no limit to that object. That is why he contemplates on that consciousness as, say, infinite consciousness. That means consciousness that takes the infinite space as object, and also that should be contemplated infinitely. So he contemplates on that consciousness, or infinite consciousness, and then the mental hindrances are subdued, his mind become concentrated, and then the second Arupa Vajrayana consciousness arises in him. And that Arupa Vajrayana, second Arupa Vajrayana consciousness is called Vijnananca Yatana. So Vijnana means consciousness, right? Ananca means infinite. And Vijnana here means the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness, not consciousness in general, but that particular consciousness, which is the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness. So he takes the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as object, and when the second Arupa Vajrayana arises, that second Arupa Vajrayana consciousness takes the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as object. That is why the second Arupa Vajrayana is called Vijnananca Yatana. So Vijnana here means first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness. And Ayatana here means just object, a base, but in the sense of object. Again, he thought this Vijnananca Yatana is close to Akasananca Yatana, which is close to material objects. And Akinchanya Yatana is better than it. So he tries to get Akinchanya Yatana, the third Arupa Vajrayana consciousness. This time, what he takes as object is the absence of, or the nothingness of, the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness. When he gets the second Arupa Vajrayana consciousness, first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness has already disappeared. So he takes that disappearance or nothingness or absence of first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as an object of his meditation. So he, when he practices meditation, he says, there is nothing whatsoever, there is nothing whatsoever. In Pali it's called nathi kinchi, nathi kinchi. So nothing whatsoever, nothing whatsoever, he practices that way. That nothingness is also a concept. It is not ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is the consciousness. But what he contemplates on is not on the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness, but on the absence of that Arupa Vajrayana consciousness. It is no longer there. And so that void, that nothingness, he takes as an object of his meditation. For example, there is a, say, pot, and then it is covered with something. But if the cover has been removed, he sees just nothing there, like that. And also, suppose now that there are many people assembled here, so a person may come and sees these people here, and then he may go out somewhere else. And then after the class is over, he will come back. And then he sees nobody here. He sees just empty space. So something like that. This person sees the absence of the first Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness. So that is concept of nothingness. That concept of nothingness he takes as object. So he practices meditation, contemplating as nothing, 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 nothing. And then the mental defilements subsided and his mind becomes concentrated again. And then, as a result of his practice of meditation, the third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness arises in him. And that Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness is called Akinchanya Yatana. Kincha means something. The ah here means not. So not something. So that is absence. And ayatana here, the same object. So the third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness takes what as object? Nothingness of first Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness, right? So that is akinchanya yatana. Again, he wants to go to a higher level of jhana, the fourth one. When he practices meditation in order to reach the fourth Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness, or Arupa Vajra Jhana, he takes the third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness as object. So he enters into the third Arupa Vajra Jhana and then emerges from that Arupa Vajra Jhana and take that third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness as object of his meditation. So he contemplates on that consciousness, saying to himself, this is peaceful, this is good. This is peaceful and this is good because it can take even nothingness as object. It would be very difficult to take a void or a nothingness as object. But this consciousness, the third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness, is so advanced, say, so subtle, that it can take even nothingness as object. So it is very peaceful, it is very good, it is lofty. So he contemplates in this way on the third Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness. And again, his mind becomes concentrated and the hindrance is subdued. Then the fourth Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness arises in him, or he reaches the fourth Arupa Vajra Jhana consciousness, or Arupa Vajra Jhana. And that fourth Arupa Vajra Jhana is called Nivasanya Nasanya Yetana. It's a long name. So we are not lucky with Arupa Vajra Jhana Chetas, all long names and longer in English translation. So the fourth is called Nivasanya Nasanya Yatana. Niva means not. Sanya means sanya. You know sanya? Sanya is a perception. Sanya is one of the Chetasikas. And na sanya means na asanya. Okay, you read the English translation below. Jhana with its concomitants, which is neither with perception know with non-perception or absence of perception, and which is a base. Here, ayatana does not mean an object. Now, please note that carefully. In the preceding three names, ayatana means simply an object. But in this fourth name, ayatana does not mean an object. Ayatana means an ayatana, a base. There are 12 bases taught in Abhidhamma, and you will study them in the seventh chapter. So, this jhana is neither with sanya nor with asanya, or nor with non-sanya. And it is a base. That is why it is called nivasanya nasanya yatana. Now, consciousness is one of the bases. Mental factors are one of the bases. There are 12 bases. Eye base, ear base, nose base, tongue base, body base, and then visible object base, right? Sound base, what else? Smell base, taste base, touch base. And then the two remaining ones are mind base, or consciousness base, and Dhamma base. Dhamma base consists of cittisikas and other subtle matter. So, here ayatana means that, the base. It is a base, and it has no perception nor non-perception. And here, perception does not mean perception only, actually. Perception here stands for all mental things, all cetasikas. So we may as well call it neva vedana na vedana. Neva phasa na phasa, and so on. We may call it if we want to. But sanya is used here. So sanya does not stand for a specific cetasika only, but here sanya stands for all mental states, all mental factors, cetasikas. And actually, it means mental activity. Now, when a person reaches this jhana, the mental activity in this jhana has become so subtle, so refined, that it is difficult to call it mental activity. It is so subtle. It almost nothing. Although it is subtle and it looks like nothing, there is still the function of sanya, function of mental activity. So it is neither sanya nor non-sanya. That is why it is called nivasanya nasanya. So there is very subtle, something like a trace of mental activity there. But it is so subtle that it is almost nothing. So when you ask him, is there sanya, he may say yes or no, right? That is why it is called nivasanya nasanya. And there are similes to explain this. You remember that simile? Who remembers that? Huh? So now, nevasanya nasanya. So there is no sanya and there is no non-sanya. Now, a monk and a novice went on a journey, and the novice went in front of the monk. So some distance ahead, he saw some water there on the road. So he reported to the monk, "Bhante, there is water." So when the monk heard that there is water, he said, "Okay, then give me my bathrobe. I want to take bath. Then the novice said, Bhante, there is no water. First he said there is water, because there is little water, enough to wet the sandals and so on. And then he said there is no water, because there is not enough water for taking bath. So in the same way, is there sanya here? Yes, there is. There is no sanya. But there is just a very subtle form of sanya here. And so it is called neva sanya, na sanya. It cannot be called sanya, and it cannot be called asanya. So it is called neva sanya, na sanya. There is another simile, and that is, there is a little residue of oil in the bowl of a monk. So the monk said, there is oil in the bowl. Then the other monk said, give me that oil. I want to use it for putting in my nose. Then the other monk said, there is no oil in the bowl. So there is not enough oil to be used as some kind of medicine for the nose. But there is some oil in the bowl. And so he said, there is oil and there is no oil. So in the same way, there is sanya and there is no sanya. Now, it is explained in the commentaries that here sanya cannot function, cannot do its function properly or fully. It's so subtle that it cannot function fully. Now, here there are two kinds of functions of sanya. One is just the perceiving the object, that is making marks of the object. And the other is to serve as an object of vipassana meditation, so that a yogi can get dispassion towards the object. That is more important. And that is what is called a full sanya function. When you practice vipassana meditation, and if you have got all these jhanas, you can take those jhanas as the object of vipassana meditation. You can contemplate on them and try to see them as impermanent and so on. But sanya here, not only sanya, any mental state here, but let's say sanya. Sanya here is so subtle that it cannot serve as the object of vipassana meditation. That means you cannot practice vipassana meditation on sanya in this jhana. You can take sanya in other jhanas as an object of vipassana meditation, and you will really see it's impermanent and so on, and you will get dispassion towards sanya. But here, it is very difficult. So it is almost impossible, to take sanya as object here. Even the Venerable Sariputta cannot take this sanya as an object of meditation. But if you have the experience of contemplating on these mental factors, when you practice vipassana, if you have a lot of experience, then, like Sariputta, you may be able to take them as object, but not one by one, but take the whole. That means the whole jhana and its concomitants. So you may take the whole of them and then contemplate on them as, say, impermanent and so on. But even the Venerable Sariputta cannot take the concomitants one by one and contemplate on each one, or practice vipassana meditation on each one and try to see impermanence and so on. So sanya is so subtle in this jhana that it cannot serve as an object of vipassana meditation, and so it is said to have not full function of sanya. So it is almost nil, it is almost absent in this sanya. But there is still very subtle sanya remaining, because if there is no sanya, there can be no mental activity at all. So there is very subtle sanya still remaining there. And that sanya is called the residue of the conditioned things. That means something like the sanya is refined again and again and again, and it becomes so refined in this jhana that it is very subtle, but it still is there. So this jhana is called niva sanya na sanya yatana. So ayatana here means base, not object. It is a base, and it is niva sanya na sanya. Or it can be translated as jhana with its concomitant having a base, having as a base perception that is neither perception nor non-perception. So this is another way of explaining it. It is just explaining it in another way, depending on grammatical explanation of the word. So whatever it is, what it means is just, it is a base and it is a jhana which cannot be said to have either sanya or non-sanya. So mental activity is there, but it is so subtle that it's almost non-existent. So this is what is meant by niva sanya na sanya yatana. Now, when a person meditates to reach the fourth arupa vajrajana, he takes the third arupa vajrajana as object, right? And then how does he meditate? Saying what? It is peaceful, it is peaceful, it is good, it is good. Now, if he contemplates on it as it is peaceful, it is good, how can he transcend it? If you say this is good, this is peaceful, this is good, you like it, you are attached to it, you don't want to let it go, right? It is good. So how can he transcend that object? Now, the simile given is a king may go out, say, on his elephant, and then he may see some craftsman, the ivory carvers, say, doing ivory work. And their bodies may be smeared with particles of ivory because they are doing ivory work, and then they are making delicate and beautiful objects of ivory. So when the king sees them, he praises them. Oh, how talented or how good they can make such beautiful objects of art. But although he praises those ivory covers, he does not want himself to become an ivory cover, right? He praises them, oh, they are fine people, they are talented people or something like that. But he will not leave his regency, kingship, and then want to become an ivory carver himself. So, although this person practices on the third Arupa Vajrajana, contemplating on it as it is good, it is peaceful, and so on, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want it for himself. But he was just just contemplating on the fact that it is peaceful, it is good. But although he contemplates on it as peaceful and good, he does not want it. That is why he is able to transcend that object. Now, the second Arupa Vajrayana takes the first Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as object, right? And the fourth Arupa Vajrayana takes the third Arupa Vajrayana consciousness as object. And I said that although they take them as object, they do not want them, right? If they want them, they will not get over those objects and they will not get the second jhana or the fourth jhana. So, why? How do you explain that? There are lots of similes given in the commentaries. So you are serving a king, and that king may be cruel, or he may do something which you don't like. So although you dislike the king, you have to serve him because you have no other livelihood. So since you have no other livelihood, you have to put up with the king and still serve him or still attend to him. So in the same way, although the yogi does not want the first Arupa Vajrayana and third Arupa Vajrayana, he has to take them as object because there is no other object to take. That is why he is able to transcend these objects and reach the higher stages of jhanas. So now these are the four Arupa Vajrayana consciousnesses. So the first is called what? Akasananchayatana. The second, Vinyananchayatana. The third, Akinchanyayatana. The fourth, Nivasanyanasanyayatana. So in English, I don't know how to say in English. So just to remind you, I put just infinite space, infinite consciousness, absence of consciousness, and neither perception nor non-perception. So, you see that in order to get the Arupa Vajrayanas, you have to overcome or you have to surmount the objects. Right? So, Arupa Vajrayanas are different from Rupa Vajrayanas in that they have to surmount the object. That means they have to something like eliminate the object in order to get the higher jhanas. Not like Rupa Vajrayanas. Do you know the difference? Do you see the difference between Rupa Vajrayanas and Arupa Vajrayanas? In Rupa Vajrayanas, in order to get a higher jhana, what must you do? You do not do away with the object, but you do away with the jhana factor, right? So you eliminate one factor after another, and you get the higher jhana. But in Arupa Vajrayanas, there are only two factors. You cannot eliminate them. So here, you get the Arupa Vajrayanas by surmounting, or by, let's say, eliminating the objects. So that is the difference. Rupa Vajrayanas are factor-eliminating jhanas, right? Arupa Vajrayanas are object-surmounting jhanas. That's the difference. Okay, later we will find out the jhanas, objects that they take and the objects that they surmount. Let's go to our Vibhaga now. The Vibhaga Chetas are identical with the wholesome Chetas. So they have the same name, Akasananchayatana and so on. So if you get the first Arupa Vajra Jhana or Akasa Ananja Yatana Jhana and you die with this jhana intact, and you will be reborn in the realm of Akasa Ananja Yatana Brahmas. And there you will have no physical body, just Chaita and Chaitasikas functioning there. And the first Chaita that arises in that realm will be the first Arupa Vajra Jhana, resultant consciousness. And if you get second Arupa Vajra Jhana here, and then when you are reborn in the Arupa Vajra realm, then the first consciousness there will be the Vijñānañjāyatana, resultant consciousness. The same with the third and the fourth. So the four Arupa Vajra Vipaka consciousness, the four resultant formless sphere consciousness, arise only in the Arupa Vajra realm. They will not arise in human beings or in devas or even in Rupa Vajra Brahmas. They will arise only in the Arupa Vajra Brahmas. And then Arupa Vajra Kriya function. That you know, right? Yeah. They belong to arahants only. So after becoming an arahant, you practice meditation and you get the Arupa Vajra jhanas, then your jhanas will be Kriya, Arupa Vajra Kriya. The same identical jhanas, Akasa Nancha Yatana, Vinya Nancha Yatana, Aking Chanya Yatana, and Nevasanya Nasanya Yatana. So, altogether, there are 12 Arupa Vajra Chaitas. 4 Kusala, 4 Vipaka, and 4 Kriya. Now, what feeling are they associated with? Upekkha only, right? Because there are only 2 jhana factors for all these 12 chaitas. They are upekkha and ekagata. That is why they are said to belong to the 5th jhana. Sometimes we will say there are 23 fifth jhana chaitas. So that means 23. That means you don't know yet, but 23, yes. But let's say 15. 3 Arupa, fifth jhana Arupa Vajra, and 12 Arupa Vajra, right? 15. Now we'll see 15 becomes 23 when we come to Lokuttara Chaitas. So all Arupa Vajra Chaitas are accompanied by Upekkha. Oh, the chart is on your back now. Right? So you see the Arupa Vajra Chaitas all blue, right? Yeah. And they are all jnana sampayutas. Because you cannot get jhanas without jnana, without knowledge or understanding. So they are all accompanied by knowledge or understanding. Now, there are 2 sets of objects to understand concerning these 4 Arupa Vajra Jhana Chaitas. So you can see on the sheet as well as in the book. But let's see on the sheet. On page 10 of the sheet, bottom, Arupa Vajra Jhanas and objects. So there are 2 kinds of objects here. Objects taken and objects summoned. That means objects abandoned or something like that. Now, the first jhana takes infinite space, which was left after the removal of kasina sign, right? So first jhana takes infinite space as object. And second jhana takes first arupa vajra jhana consciousness as object. And the third jhana, here first, second, third, fourth means arupa vajra, not rupa vajra. So that arupa vajra jhana takes absence of first arupa vajra jhana consciousness as object. And the fourth arupa vajra jhana takes third arupa vajra jhana consciousness as object. So these are the objects they take. And there are four objects they must surmount. So the first arupa vajra jhana must surmount the counterpart sign, so long as he is attached to that counterpart sign, he cannot get the first jhana. So the first jhana must surmount the counterpart sign, which is a mental image of the kasina object. And the second arupa vajra jhana must surmount or transcend infinite space. And third arupa vajra jhana that jhana must surmount or transcend first arupa vajra jhana consciousness. And then the fourth arupa vajra jhana must transcend the absence of first arupa vajra jhana consciousness. First they take them as objects, right? And then they surmount them, they transcend them. So they have to take these objects as the object of their meditation. And when their meditation is successful and they get the jhana, these objects are no longer there. These objects are surmounted. So there are two sets of objects with regard to four arupa vajra jhanas. So the objects they take and objects they surmount. Just a little bit different. So today we come to the end of mundane consciousness, Lokiya Chaitas. Right? So how many mundane types of consciousness are there? 54 sense sphere consciousness, 15 let's say rupa vajra consciousness, and 12 arupa vajra consciousness. How many? 81, right? So 81 lokiya chetas, right? Now, the 15 rupa vajra chetas and 12 arupa vajra chetas are collectively called Mahagada. You can read in the book. Mahagada. So later on, if we want to refer to these 27 as a whole, we will say 27 Mahagada Chetas. But we will not say 15 Rupa Vajra and 12 Arupa Vajra. But we will just say 27 Mahagada Chetas. Mahagada means become great or lofty, sublime. So 27 Mahagata Chetas. Then 54 Sensuya Chetas and 27 Mahagata Chetas. And they become 81 Lokiya or mundane Chetas. Okay. So let's do some drill. Okay, so there are how many Lokiya Chetas? 81 Chetas. So how are they divided? Broadly divided. Kama, sensuya consciousness and Mahagada consciousness, right? How many are sensuya consciousness? 54. And how many Mahagada? 27. And 54 karma vajra, sense via consciousness, how are they divided? 12 akusala chetas, and then 18 ahituka or rootless, and 24, beautiful, right? Beautiful sensory consciousness. Yes. And how are the 15 rupa vajra chaitas divided? Let's say first jhana, second jhana, and so on. So three first jhana rupa vajra consciousness, three second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and fifth jhana. And then arupa vajra jhana consciousness, three first jhana, or akasa nanja jhana, three second arupa vajra jhana, three third arupa vajra jhana, and three fourth arupa vajra jhana. And with regard to feeling, how among the 15 rupa vajra chaitas, how many are accompanied by somanasa? 12. First jhana, 3. Second jhana, 3. Third jhana, 3. Fourth jhana, 3. And how many are accompanied by upekkha? 3. Fifth jhana chaitas, 3. And among 12 arupa vajra chaitas, how many are accompanied by somanasa? None. How many are accompanied by upekkha? All 15. So among 27 mahagata chaitas, how many are accompanied by somanasa? No. It's okay. You look well. 12. And how many are accompanied by upekkha? 15. Right? 15. Fifth jhana rupa vajra chaitas, and 12 arupa vajra chaitas. Yeah. So these are called mundane chaitas. That means they belong to the three realms, kama vajra, rupa vajra, and arupa vajra. Later we'll go to, we'll transcend the loka and go to lokottara chaitas, but that will come later. So today we finish the 81 mundane consciousness. So make yourself familiar with the dots, and also please try to remember names, because names are important. Because if you don't know a name, then it's very difficult to identify. So have you got familiar with the chart?
Yes.
Oh, in the book, let's see, on page, what's that, 64, there is a diagram, a chart, the same as the one I gave here. So, chitta, direct object, transcendent object. Number one, base of infinite space, that means akasa nanjayana, the book uses base. And then direct object, that means the object taken, concept of space. And then transcendent object, concept of kasina, that means kasina sign, counterpart sign. And the two, base of infinite consciousness, the second jhana chaita, direct object, consciousness of infinite space, the first arupa vajra consciousness. And then transcendent object, concept of space, so infinite space, they are the same. And then number three, base of nothingness, that means third arupa vajra jhana consciousness. And direct object or object taken is concept of non-existence or nothingness. And transcendent object, consciousness of infinite space, that means third arupa vajra jhana consciousness. And then number four, base of neither perception nor non-perception, that is the fourth arupa vajra jhana. Direct object or object taken is consciousness of nothingness, that means third arupa vajra jhana consciousness. And transcendent object, concept of non-existence, that is absence of first arupa vajrajana consciousness. Absence means absence is not an ultimate reality. So that absence, nothingness, is also a concept. So when we say absence, we must understand it is a concept. In Pali, we call nati bhava panyati. So that's why it is given here as concept of non-existence. That means concept of non-existence of what? The first jhana consciousness. So they are the same. Okay. Yeah, we have some time.
And then what's the motive for the arahant to practice the rupa and arupa?
That's good. Jhana. Yeah. I left it out. One author said, and I think that is correct. The motive I told you applies to the time when there is no Buddha's teachings available. So what about arahants or disciples of the Buddha getting arupa vajrajanas? They have no such actually a wrong view about rupa and so on, right? And so especially those who have attained enlightenment can have no wrong views about rupa, that if we can get rid of rupa, we will be really happy. So these arupa vajrajanas are necessary or actually essential for the attainment of what are called abhinyas, supernormal knowledge, like remembering past lives, seeing beings, or say getting a divine eye, and say doing some miracles and so on. So those are called abhinyas. Those abhinyas can be obtained only if a person gets all, say, 8 or 9 jhanas, including these 4. So, those disciples of the Buddha, including arahants, who try to get these jhanas, do so because they want them to be the basis for the attainment of abhinyas. And also I think it is for the attainment of cessation for anagamis and arahants. So you will understand them later. So attainment of cessation means to be without mental activity altogether for some time. So during that time you will be like a statue. No mental activity. So mental activity is suspended for as long as you wish, for 7 days or shorter than 7 days. So in order to get into that attainment of cessation also, you need all 9 jhanas. So it is said that it is like nibbana itself. When you are in the attainment of cessation, that is, you temporarily go out of being. Actually, your body just functions independent of your mind because your mental activity is suspended. So they experience a great happiness or peacefulness when mind is temporarily suspended, and so the anagamis and arahants wanted to enjoy that happiness by entering into the attainment of cessation. For them, in order to be able to get into the attainment of cessation, they need these 8 jhanas, including these 4. So for the disciples of the Buddha, they try to get these jhanas so that they become the basis for the higher attainments. Not that they have the wrong notion that if they are without physical body, they will be really happy. That's a very good question.
Can I have a follow-up question on that? You know, the Arahant, especially the Arahant, they have a phala, right, consciousness. So is that sufficient for them to relax, or why do they need to get into the cessation state?
Right. They can enter into what is called phala. Phala attainment, fruit attainment. That is similar to attainment of cessation. But when in phala attainment, there is still consciousness, right? So long as there is consciousness, there is arising and disappearing, coming and going. So when there is coming and going, appearing and disappearing, that is a sign of dukkha. Suffering means being oppressed by arising and disappearing. So there is still a kind of suffering, although we would very much like to get that suffering. So there is still suffering for them, for the arahants. So in order to get more peacefulness, then the attainment of fruition, they try to get into attainment of cessation. So there, for some period, they don't feel anything, right? So that is what they call happiness or peacefulness, sukha.
But the only way to go to the formless sphere is to go to the samatha meditation.
Yeah, this is samatha meditation, yes. And the practice of rupa vajra jhanas and arupa vajra jhanas will be explained in the ninth chapter also. Ninth chapter deals with meditation, samatha meditation and vipassana meditation. So we will come to these jhanas again there. In fact, I can defer this explanation until we come to the ninth chapter, but I cannot hold this information from you, so I told you this time. I may repeat it when we reach the ninth chapter, or just refer you to my talks, and if you can, and if you have this book, I mean the Path of Purification, for this Arupa Vajra, please read chapter 10. The chapter 10 deals with these jhanas, arupa vajra jhana jhanas. Okay, then.